This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiyis Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the sort of numbers we're looking at now, since the beginning of this year, Spain has seen some 23,000 migrants come ashore. Now, if you compare that to the whole of last year, Spain received only 6,500. So there's a very big increase there.
That's Catherine Field in Paris. We'll have full details on this story coming up.
Also, Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed heads home today after being engulfed by a wave of support from the country's diaspora community in the United States.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: after a relatively smooth election yesterday, tensions are rising in Zimbabwe as people anxiously wait to hear who won the presidency and other top posts. The opposition is crying foul over the slow pace of compiling official results, even though final tallies weren't expected for days. They say delays provide time for cheating. The government denied any vote rigging. Both sides claim they are ahead. Opposition supporters are dancing in the streets, but police have positioned water cannons in several cities, including five near the opposition headquarters in Harare. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinavashi reports.
Tendai Biti is a principal in the main opposition coalition, the MDC Alliance, which has been in a tight race with the ruling ZANU-PF. This is the first election since President Robert Mugabe was pressured into resigning, and the country has been accused of rigging past balloting. He says delays by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, also known as ZEC, in announcing parliamentary results raise concerns.
ZEC is taking its time in transmitting results from polling stations to wards and to constituency centers. And this delay is totally unacceptable, particularly in urban centers like Harare, Bulawayo, Mutare, Gweru, Mashingo. The results are not being moved from polling stations to command centers.
Biti said such delays create an opportunity to manipulate the election process.
We know that it is in these periods of delay and uncertainty that merchants of chaos, that bishops of electoral fraud will do their own things. So we are calling upon ZEC to immediately comply with the law and start making the formal declarations at constituencies as is required by the law.
Biti says the commission has not released the 21% of the forms which capture the number of votes at every polling station. This helps independent bodies and political parties to compile their own findings, which they can cross-reference with the ZEC's results when they are out. Biti claims there are plots to assassinate him and MDC Alliance President Nelson Chamisa on orders from retired General Constantino Chiwenga. Munyaradzi Dodo is the editor of Open Parley, an online publication closely covering the electoral processes.
MDC is trying to keep their supporters excited and positive, and I think they're just trying to keep information current and relevant because, you know, in the absence of information, fake news prevails.
Dodo feels the alliance should have waited for the announcement of results by ZEC. He says the alliance's allegations could be viewed as preparation to dispute any results that they may not agree with. ZEC says some of the results for local authority and parliamentary results have already been compiled and announced at respecting polling stations and provincial offices while the nation awaits the presidential results. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zunawashe from Harare.
Meanwhile, Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission has reported two presidential candidates to police for campaigning outside the allowed time. The offense can be punished by imprisonment, fines, and possible disqualification from holding public office. The commission refused to name the accused, but some observers claim to have witnessed the violation by the ruling party and the main opposition. Sebastian Monfu reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe Electoral Commission head Priscilla Chigumba said Monday polls opened smoothly, but two presidential candidates were reported to police for serious campaign violations. Chigumba said the commission witnessed two presidential candidates who were still campaigning less than 24 hours before the vote, a violation that could see them fined, disqualified from office, or even jailed. When pressed, the commission chief refused to name the candidates accused of breaking campaigning rules.
In the interest of maintaining a peaceful environment whilst voting is going on, I respectfully decline to confirm the names of such candidates. Today is polling day, and we need peace, and we need everyone to be comfortable to go out to exercise their right to vote without fear. Once the Zimbabwe Republic Police has confirmed whether or not there's been any evidence, that information will be shared with you at the appropriate time.
Observers say the commission is referring to the ruling ZANU-PF's President Emmerson Mnangagwa and the opposition Movement for Democratic Change Alliance's Nelson Chamisa. In a Sunday Facebook video post, Mnangagwa accused Chamisa of striking a deal with the former President Robert Mugabe.
Now that it is clear to all that Chamisa has forged a deal with Mugabe, we can no longer believe that his intentions are to transform Zimbabwe and rebuild our nation. The choice is clear. You either vote for Mugabe under the guise of Chamisa, or you vote for a new Zimbabwe under my leadership and ZANU-PF. Real change is coming. We should all be part of it. God bless Zimbabwe.
Mugabe declared his support for the opposition candidate Chamisa instead of his former ZANU-PF party colleague. Rindai Chifunde Vava leads the Zimbabwe Election Support Network, an alliance of more than 40 pro-democracy groups. She says it is clear that ZANU-PF and the MDC alliance ignored the one-day cooling-down period when campaigning is not allowed and cites other issues.
We also noted the threats in some areas, urging people to go and vote for some particular parties. But as of today, we noted that the polls opened on time in most places. And we also noted the materials were all over. The ZEC officers were in place and also ready for the job. We noted long queues, but of serious concern right now is the exclusion list. People have registered, some have inspected, but they don't find their names on the voters' roll today. So that is really a trend which you are looking in terms of how far and how many people are affected by that.
Chamisa on Monday tweeted that voting delays were a quote, deliberate attempt, unquote, to undermine his supporters. It is not clear how far Zimbabwe authorities will go to enforce the rules against campaigning a day before the vote. The commission has been accused of engineering past votes in favor of Mugabe, who ruled Zimbabwe from independence in 1980 until he was removed in November. A ZANU-PF spokesman, Munyara Zipo Mangwana, said the party would wait for the police investigation before commenting on the Electoral Commission's accusation. The opposition MDC Alliance did not immediately respond to the reported campaigning violation. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Spain's Coast Guard rescued at least 1,000 migrants from the Mediterranean Sea over this past weekend. The International Organization for Migration says the shift to Spain as a new destination point has occurred in the past 10 days for seaborne African migrants trying to get into Europe. Italy had been the main disembarkation point, but has balked at taking more people. Reporter Catherine Field spoke with me about the change in migration flow, as well as a new report from Save the Children that highlights the desperate lengths young women and girls are going to in hopes of funding their journey from Italy into France.
The sort of numbers we're looking at now, since the beginning of this year, Spain has seen some 23,000 migrants come ashore. Now, if you compare that to the whole of last year, Spain received only 6,500. So there's a very big increase there. The migrants in particular are coming from sub-Saharan Africa, Guinea, Morocco, Mali, and Mauritania. Now, this is putting a substantial pressure on the Spanish authorities because they're really not used to these big waves of arrivals. So what they've done, they've allocated an extra 30 million euros to pay for the housing, the temporary housing, and to contribute to NGOs who are looking after this new wave. And that's expected to really get in place this week because the Spanish authorities say they expect this trend to continue. And for the time being, all of the places which they have, the reception centers they have in Andalusia, in the south of France, particularly around Algeciras, they say these are already full, but they are doing what they can to try and make sure that they have in place other areas in the country for them to go. Certainly on the European level, this has focused minds a lot more on what was discussed last week and proposed by the European Commission and the IOM and UNHCR, that the European Union actually set up these processing centres in Europe. And the suggestion now is that the EU should be coming together with the IOM and with UNHCR and setting up that first processing centre on EU soil, and that should be in Spain.
So this basically was the outcome of yesterday's meeting.
Yes, indeed. Really what they needed was a place, a focus, if you like, for where this particular centre in Europe was going to be. And now with this real upturn in the number who are arriving in Spain, that has given them more of a focus. We've also seen the meeting with the IOM and the UNHCR this week, that they are still trying to push ahead with these arrangements for regional disembarkation platforms. They still haven't had a response from some of the North African nations on that. They are still concerned that not enough countries are interested in having these disembarkation platforms in their country. Because what they are saying, particularly the IOM and UNHCR, is they do have places, particularly in Niger and their emergency transit center. They say that if they do have these so-called platforms in North Africa, then at least they can fly people from there to Niger where they'll be able to process them.
Also, I wanted to talk about another matter regarding migrants, and that's that report that came out by Save the Children, which highlights the lengths that young women are going to fund their journey from Italy into France. Can you tell us about this report?
This was specifically came from Save the Children in Italy. They have been helping migrants who have got as far as the Italian border and now need to get over to France. What they are saying is that there are now a lot more women traveling, migrating on their own, and a lot more younger women. Now, the charity says that between January of 2017 and March 2018, at least 1,900 girls had been sexually exploited in that French-Italian border area. They were exploited because they needed money, they needed food, they needed shelter to be able to make that journey across into France. Now, that particular journey would cost anywhere between 50 and 150 euros just to get across the border. What the charity is saying is that by the time they've reached the border, these women have generally run out of money. There's nothing new in this report. It really does echo what the NGO group Oxfam said in June. But where it's interesting is that they're once again appealing to the French government and the Italian government to do something about this.
That was Catherine Field in Paris.
Nineteen past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Nigerians go to the polls next year. Observers say several issues could determine if the balloting will be free and fair. From the Nigerian capital, Abuja, reporter Gift Agiriga looks at some factors that could make a difference.
Recently, an international delegation came to Nigeria to assess the political and electoral environment and to make recommendations if necessary. The observers came from the Washington-based National Democratic Institute, NDI, and the International Republican Institute, IRI. The delegation listed several factors that could disrupt the polls, including vote buy-in, insecurity, hate speech, and political realignment. The delegation said that Nigeria has one of the lowest levels of women in elected office within West Africa. They recommended that the inclusion of youths, women, and persons with disabilities would facilitate the emergence of a broad range of new leaders. They noted that terrorist attacks, clashes between pastoralists and farmers were on the rise, and the inability of security forces to quell the violence, if not addressed, could erode confidence in government. Ezenwa Nwagwo is the chairman of the group called Partners for Electoral Reform in Nigeria. He says he is confident that the 2019 election will go smoothly.
The doors have been closed against the politicians. The issues that we're dealing with are no longer ballot box snatching, ballot box stuffing. We no longer have issues around diversion of electoral materials to private homes.
Are we having challenges? Yes. Is there any country that doesn't have challenges? No. It is our ability to overcome those challenges and the resilience of the Nigerian people and their capacity to overcome that is important to me. And I think that 2019 will be good.
Nwago says he has no doubt that Nigeria has the capacity to manage its election despite terrorist attacks by Boko Haram or intercommunal violence in some parts of the country. He also called on the media to avoid sensational headlines that could incite confusion across the country. Ebiowe Sukari is the former head of public relations for the Independent National Electoral Commission, INEC. He says persistent insecurity and violence could pose as a challenge to the conduct of the election.
We have a lot of displaced persons because of the herdsmen attack all over the country. And how INEC will be able to manage the process such that those displaced persons vote and the voting process for those IDPs will not be maneuvered and manipulated. For me, it's a critical issue. All those are clear signals for me that the electoral process, the 2019 elections, I think will have issues. But we are still some months away and a lot can be remedied.
Sukari advised the government to see to it that people are not encumbered or manipulated by fear and intimidation. As the clock ticks down to the elections, many observers are hoping that these issues will be addressed so voter can vote with confidence and democracy will be strengthened. For VOA, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed heads home today after being engulfed by a wave of support from the country's diaspora community in the United States. The reformist leader has made massive changes in his country that have been welcomed by crowds in Washington, Los Angeles, and Minneapolis. They greeted him like a rock star, waving flags and signs of praise. Some wore T-shirts bearing his slogan, "Break the Wall, Build a Bridge." More than 10,000 jubilant people poured into the Target Center in Minneapolis yesterday, and their enthusiasm didn't fade as they waited 4 hours to hear Abiy speak. Some described the rapid turnaround in Ethiopia as a dream come true. But while he has restored ties with neighboring Eritrea, freed political prisoners, and encouraged economic development, Abiy still faces numerous political challenges, including from those who have lost clout in his transformation.
Widespread clearing of the world's rainforests continues to threaten the planet's biodiversity, reduce overall rainfall, degrade the land, and threaten indigenous cultures. This despite decades of warnings from climate scientists. According to the National Geographic Society, an area about half the size of England is deforested every year due to agriculture, logging, mining, the need for cooking fuel, and other factors. VOA's Adam Phillips reports on the crisis with a special focus on the Congolese rainforests.
Tropical rainforests make up what climatologists call a green belt. It circles the land portions of the equator from the Amazon basin in South America through Southeast Asia to Africa's Congo basin, which boasts the second largest rainforest in the world. Rainforests not only produce much of the world's oxygen, they're also the source of much of the planet's life-giving rainfall, says Lars Lovall, a special advisor to Rainforest Foundation Norway.
Science has known for quite a while that the tropical rainforest has an amazing ability to store humidity and recirculate the water. The humidity evaporates, it goes up into the air, it gets cold, it falls down as rain. And this is repeated over and over again.
Deforestation has a global impact. Some climate scientists have concluded that rampant rainforest destruction in the Amazon helps explain the spike in severe droughts in the western United States. But the effects of deforestation can be felt locally too.
In DR Congo, for instance, some 40 million people have their livelihood coming from inside those forests by agriculture, by hunting. They provide them with medicines. The forest is really everything they have. But it's also very important for neighboring countries. In the drier region of Eastern Africa, for instance, a large proportion of the rain which sustains the agriculture comes exactly from the Congolese rainforest.
Many factors contribute to the Congo's deforestation. Perhaps chief among them is unrestrained corporate incursion into the rainforests for timber, gems, precious metals, and other goods. Whatever the causes, saving the rainforest cries out for skillful, effective, time-tested stewardship. Marine Gauthier is a Paris-based writer and researcher focused on environmental and human rights issues, especially of indigenous peoples. She says the traditional Pygmy and Bantu tribes of the DRC are the forest's natural caretakers.
Where indigenous peoples live, the forest lives. Indigenous peoples' practices have been sustainable for thousands of years, and they know how to protect the forest. They actually know the forest better than anyone. I'm always amazed and I learn a lot from them.
Lars Lovald has had a similar experience.
Just going with kids of 6, 7, 8 years old into the forest, they can teach you a million things about the ants, the plants, what you must avoid, what you can eat, etc. It's marvelous.
In DRC, where the government owns the land, cartographer Barthélemy Bouika works with indigenous groups to map their ancestral territories. Together with other advocates, he helps them make the case for legal ownership and stewardship of portions of the forest.
We help people show where is their land, where is the area they don't like people to touch, where is the area they collect their food. So it is a very important tool.
Lovald acknowledges that the forest-dwelling peoples of the DRC face an uphill struggle. There are many business and government players who make quick profits from the forest lands.
The good thing is that I have seen the issue of rainforest protection going to become a global issue at the highest international political level. We have very firm agreements. Also, poor countries are committing to reducing deforestation, but deforestation is still continuing at too high a level. And if rainforests are destroyed beyond a certain level, there is actually no way of getting them back.
Lovald adds that we may then have a scenario where the greenbelt dries out, then becomes savanna land, and eventually morphs into a Sahara-like desert that will almost certainly cause famine, displacement, and war on an epic scale, while also spelling doom for most of the Earth's animal and plant species. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wahib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis, and for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Looking for something? Headline news, interviews, analysis? We've got it all on voaafrica.com.
voaafrica.com.